My name is Judy Etzel, and I'm interviewing Joseph S. Harden from Oral City, native of Titusville, a descendant of a family whose patriarch was a giant in the oil industry. He married a woman, also Barbara Morgan, whose ancestor was equally famous in the oil patch. But in his own right, Joe Harvey was a leader in the banking industry as he directed all of the efforts to grow his local bank into a leading Western Pennsylvania financial institution. We're going to start with the early life. We're going to go way back, Joe.
Way back. All the way back to Titusville. You have me up against your father and your uncle.
I do. When were you born? What's the date?
1920. I was born July 17th, 1920, and that was back when everybody was born at home. Never went to the hospital for that because birth was just a normal kind of thing, and besides, there didn't used to be so many hospitals.
Are you the oldest of so many children? How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Well, I had three brothers. One still is alive. He is older than I.
Okay.
That makes him real old.
Were you born, I read somewhere where you were born in the homestead, the Seep homestead.
I don't know whether you'd call it the homestead or not, but it was the Joseph Seep house. When Joseph Seep came up to Pennsylvania from Kentucky, he had, at that point, had forged some kind of an alliance with John D. Rockefeller and worked closely with the Standard Oil. And as far as I know, Joseph Seep came up here from Kentucky probably around 1870. I'm not sure of the exact date, but about the same time that the National Transit Building was built, he decided apparently that he was going to be around here for a while, so he and his wife decided that they would build a house in Titusville.
Let me go back to Seep. He came from Kentucky. How did he get to the United States? He was German, wasn't he?
He was German, and his parents emigrated from Germany, and it's not clear to me or to anybody else in the family whether it was religious persecution or just a desire to go to this new world where the streets were paved with gold and all that hokum. It must have been a real estate developer that sold people on that idea. But
was he born in the United States, Joseph?
No, Joseph was born in Germany. And apparently the family came to the United States around 1840s. I'm not sure exactly when, but not too long after they had gotten here, there was a cholera epidemic, and his father died in that epidemic, and so his mother was there with a bunch of small children. Joseph was the oldest boy, so he had to go to work to support the family, and at age 11, today would be illegal. At age 11, he went out and got a job and helped to support the family.
This is in Kentucky.
He was still in Kentucky, and his first job was rolling cigars. And that's not a favorite thing today either, but that's what he did. And someplace along the line in Kentucky, Lexington or Covington, I'm not sure exactly which, he met the gal that was going to be his wife. Her name was Catherine Hillenmeyer. They, too, were Germans, although they had been in this country a little before the Seep family, and they were in the nursery business. They had a nursery which is still in operation, and is the oldest nursery west of the Alleghenies. Someplace along the line, he also met some other people and got into a different line of work, and the people he was working for traded in commodities, cottonseed oil, among other things, and that's how he sort of backed into the oil business, because the oil, of course, is a commodity, and
so he set his sights, knowing about this speculation, well, of Drake's Well, and then the speculation that came on in Titusville. He set his sights to go to Titusville?
Well, he went to Titusville primarily because his business by that time, he was operating a business under his own name, the Joseph C. Purchasing Agency. And he lived in Titusville, worked in Oil City, and he bought and sold crude oil. He provided all of the oil required by the Standard Oil refineries.
How did he do that? When you say he went out and bought oil, how did he go out and personally say, "I'll take your next week's supply"?
Well, I'm sure that as it grew, he no longer was able to do it personally, but he and or his associates would go to the various producers and buy the oil, the crude oil that they had in their tanks.
What was existing? I mean, we didn't do any futures purchasing.
No, to a certain extent he was dealing in futures, as well as the present stock of oil that any of the producers had in their tanks. I'm not sure that dealing in futures was early in the game, but it came later. And that, of course, became very important to the Standard Oil Company, because knowing what the price of oil was in the future made it easier and financially better to operate and buy and run the refineries and so on.
They would pretty much set the price for the oil of the whole valley.
Yes. And at that point, that valley was the only source of crude oil. There wasn't much use for it except kerosene.
Illumination.
And later, they were able to refine a lubricating oil from the heavier parts of the crude oil. That sort of evolved over the years.
When Joseph Seed came to Titusville, was he affiliated with any particular company at that time, or did he just show up?
I think he came because of his activity in buying oil. He went to the source. The source was that valley.
But he wasn't buying for any particular person like John D. Rumsfeld.
Not originally. He was buying because he was working with some people that traded in commodities. Bostwick and Tilford was the name of the partnership that he worked with. And ultimately, they became associated with the Standard Oil Company. The Standard Oil Company was the principal real buyer for crude, all crude, and the independent producers who were producing this crude oil neither liked nor trusted John D. Rockefeller. They did like and trust Joseph C. They knew that his word was good, and they knew that if he gave them a check or a due bill, that it was good too. As a matter of fact, they were so sure it was good that quite often they didn't bother taking these credits or cashing these checks, knowing that the checks were always going to be good, and That's the principle of a lot of banks are built on today.
So that is even more into your heritage. Let me ask you, when he came to Titusville, where did he, you say he built a home?
No, that came later. Okay. I assume that they bought a house. And the house, the one house that I am sure of was on West Walnut Street in Titusville. The house, or at least, I'm not sure if it's still there today, but recently it was still there. Incidentally, along the way, he and his wife had a sizable family of 11 children. That's a lot. How would you like to be buying groceries for 11 kids today?
That's an awful lot. Now, the house that you grew up in was the Seep home.
As I said, it was about 1870 or so when he came to Titusville. And it was about 1890, 1892, someplace in there, that they built a house in Titusville. And I was born in that house, as were my older brothers. My one younger brother was born in the house next door that was built by my parents.
What was the address of that?
314 West Main Street, and the Seep House address was 304 West Main Street.
When growing up in Titusville, let me back up a little bit. You were born in 1920. Your grandfather died in 1929.
28.
Do you recall him?
Yes, very much so.
What was thinking back on him, was he a large man? Was he a verbose man? Was he quiet?
He wasn't particularly large. As a matter of fact, he was rather short. But he was well known in that area, well known in the oil industry. Obviously, he was the guy that was going to pay you for your oil. You got to know him. But I really, by the time I was 2 or 3 years old, we the Harvey family moved out of the Seep house and moved next door into the Harvey house.
The house that your father built. The house that your father built?
Yes.
Your father was a driller.
No, he was a producer.
A producer.
Yeah.
Was he from this area? Was he a native of this area?
I don't know an awful lot about the Harveys. They were Irish, and his father, I believe, was born in Ireland, came to Canada, and at that point, the railroads needed a lot of warm bodies to build the railroads, that's where most of these Irishmen went to work. Now, whether they just walked across the border or nobody cared. There wasn't that big hassle about immigration and all of that. And the immigrants weren't taking any jobs that the natives already had.
I would assume Titusville would be a huge draw for immigrants. I mean, looking back in the old city records, Old City certainly was.
Well, of course, Titusville originally was a lumber town. Lumber was the thing that first built Titusville. And then later on, there were a lot of oil people that worked in or around Oil City, but lived in Titusville.
Now, your dad was a producer, and your mother was the descendant of a very significant oil clan. So you grew up in the surrounded by the petroleum business.
Yes.
Both the nitty-gritty of it and the financial part of it. Were you aware of that at a young age, that this is a little different than most people? I'm surrounded by this.
Well, yes, I guess I was sort of aware of it, but that was our world. We didn't know anything about the world beyond that. And that was unknown.
Was that kind of the sense of all of Titusville when you were growing up, that, you know, we're an oil town? Was that identity still very, very significant in that town in the 20s and 30s?
I believe in the 20s and 30s it still was.
Did you...
By that time, of course, the oil patch had spread, and it included Bradford, and it gradually went into a lot of other states, went into the Midwest and the Southwest. And
did you ever work, when you were younger, did you ever accompany your father? Maybe not your grandfather, because you would have been very young, but did you ever go out with your dad when he was in his fields, his production
yeah.
fields? Did it stick with you that you might want to do that?
As a matter of fact, his oil property was... I learned to drive a car on the roads going in.
You were probably 12.
Well, they didn't have driver's ed then. You learn to drive and how to stay on the road on back roads.
Now, you went to St. Joe's Academy.
To begin with, I went to St. Titus School. And incidentally, I having older brothers, I knew how to read before I went to school, so along the way I skipped a grade, which was a plus and a minus, although ultimately that made a big difference, because had I not skipped a grade, I wouldn't have graduated from college in 1941, it would have been later, but I graduated from college in June of 41, and 6 months after that, we were really in the fighting part of the war. We were in the war before, and everybody knew it. As, you know, Lynn Lease and so on.
That was, you knew it was coming.
That was just a way to get around the law and get Congress and the people to support it. And it was pretty fortunate that that's what happened. Had it not been for that, you and I would both be speaking German now.
I think that's true. Let me back up to when you were in school. Did you work during the summers? Did you work? It would be natural that I would think you would work somewhere in the oil industry. Did you work?
Not until later. Well, for one thing, early on, you know, things were tough, and my parents said, you shouldn't be taking a job away from somebody that needs it to put food on his family's table. So that was kind of the way that it was.
This was during the Depression.
Pardon?
This was during the Depression.
Yeah. Well, it was the war that pulled us out of the Depression. But that's an expensive way to do it, by the way.
It's very expensive.
And I won't make any comments about our present president or how to get in and out of war.
When this is done,
how to get out of it.
When this is done, you and I will go have a cup of coffee. Tell me about growing up on your block, though. You're it's an unusual time. It's a time of, I would think, great prosperity on one hand, with people
yeah.
who had oil money, and an enormous amount of poverty on the other. What was it like growing up on your block?
Well, for one thing, I guess I was fortunate in that part of Titusville in which I grew up. There were a lot of other kids around my age or a little older, and so that was kind of interesting, because, you know, we used to get out and see these other kids, whether they were going to the public schools or to St. Titus or whatever. But after school, we associated with each other quite a bit. Well, who else are you going to play ball with except the kids that were there, regardless of where they went to school?
Did you ever go down to where would be the future home of Drake Well Museum? I mean, did you ever say, let's go down and look at that old oil well?
Well, believe it or not, I never got to the Great Well until I was probably in high school.
And what prompted you to go then?
Oh, I was with some other guys and we went out for a hike and somebody said, well, the Drake Well's right down there, let's go. And so we walked down the tracks. And
what would it have been? Just a well? Just a jack, pumping jack and a
yeah,
well? Any significance to it at the time?
Not at that point. It was I guess, probably in the late 30s or maybe even later than that before anybody did anything about memorializing Drake and the well.
What was downtown Titusville like when you were, say, in high school?
I guess I would say it's a typical small town of the era. Of course, that was before wall art, and there still was a downtown.
There were, even in the 50s and 60s, growing up in Oral City was just booming.
Oh, yeah.
And I would assume that Titusville at that time was. Did you find that as a young man in high school, was a town like Titusville and Bradford and Oral City, Smithport even, those oil towns, did you later leave those and come back and say those really were different kinds of towns?
Well, there's the fact that Oil City was a booming town led me to decide that that's where I was going to be, rather than Titusville.
And so that was the destination point.
Yeah.
Now you went to St. Joseph Academy, where incidentally I know you were vice president of your class. You probably didn't know.
I forgot.
Yeah, you were.
You must have been reading all the newspapers.
I did. Actually, there was a wonderful 1966 article in the Youngstown Vindicator about you, in which I think you had just been named president of the bank, and they said you looked more like a football player than a banker.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
I'll find that article for you.
The Youngstown Vindicator.
Mm-hmm, front page.
Youngstown, that was Ohio. That was far away.
Did the seat name carry any privilege for you, do you think, when you were in Titusville?
I suppose it probably did, but I don't think I capitalized on it. I think, it, as far as I was concerned, it was just a fact of life. And it didn't make any difference to the guys that I'd play ball with.
But it was a well-known name, and it did carry
of fame. Yeah, because the seat purchasing agency was still in existence. Although Joseph Seat was dead, the business continued. It was continued, really, by Standard Oil, because the producers all knew that was where they could go to sell their oil.
Did he work through the oil exchange in Oil City, or did he do it more on his own?
I'm not sure exactly how that evolved. Originally, of course, it was on his own. How the oil exchange evolved, I really don't know. I never had any involvement with it. I just sort of knew that it existed, and I can't tell you. I don't know.
Titusville always came across as a town that had a lot of wealthy individuals. They made their fortune and lost it just as quickly. Did you get that sense that you were around a lot of very privileged families because of the oil industry?
I guess I was aware of it, and I probably didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it. It was a fact of life. This is a part of my world.
Now you leave St. Joe's Academy. How did you went to Georgetown University? How did you choose that?
How did I choose Georgetown?
Yes.
There are some other members of the family went there. That was largely it. It was I think that it was a Catholic college. As a matter of fact, it was the oldest Catholic college in the country, and it was run by the Jesuits, and they had a terrific reputation for being a great organization, great educators. And along the line, I became a believer that education in the basic things after you once got out of high school were important before you got into the learning the details of an engineering job, for instance.
You're a liberal arts fan.
Yeah.
I know one when I see one.
Well, today I think still think it was great. I think it was greater now than I might have thought it was, but nevertheless.
Did your, in just my own family and families I knew, in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, these communities sent their children to hugely prestigious schools. I mean, the Ivy Leagues were all included in that. I mean, it was nothing to be just sending all of your youngsters to the Seven Sisters schools, the Ivy Leagues. When you went to Georgetown, which is one of those, did your peers also do that?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I think that I think there were some families, for instance, that would steer their children to schools like Cornell. That was specifically, that's one that I was aware of because the Fleming family, and they were related to us. They all went to Cornell. There are other families where they steered their kids to Princeton, and also at that point, state schools, basically, with the exception of Penn State, basically were just teacher schools, Clarion Normal, and so on. I don't know why it was called Normal.
I don't either. That would turn you right off. It would be like, why would I go there?
But the state school system was nothing like it is today. Today, it's come a far cry, and it's a heck of a lot better than it used to be. Broader.
When you went to Georgetown, this would have been 1937.
I graduated from high school in 1937, and I graduated from college in 1941.
How did you get to Georgetown? Did you take the train? Did you drive?
Drive. Not them. In the first place, that would have been a major undertaking in an automobile. Have to have at least two spare tires because anyway, it was train.
By train. And you obviously roomed in a dormitory, is that?
Yeah.
And who was your first roommate? Who were your roommates during school?
I did not have very many roommates. The one in particular that I roomed with more than anybody else became an attorney and ultimately practiced law in Philadelphia, maritime law. How we arrived at that from Pennsylvania, I don't know. But
how about, and you were a chemistry major.
Yeah, that's...
How did you...
I worked at it for a while and found out that I really, being interested in chemistry and working in a laboratory someplace, they were different.
But how did you choose that major? Because that seems... I want to make the leap back to the petroleum industry, but I don't think I can do that. How would you pick chemistry coming from the environment you did?
I guess probably I thought at some point I would become a chemical engineer and get into that end of the oil business. Well, it really didn't work out that way, and the war came along, and I wound up in some strange places doing some strange things in the military. I tried, wanted to get into the Marine Corps.
Well, all of Titusville was a big Marine Corps town.
Yeah. Especially thanks to Bill Stevenson and
yes.
It was. I couldn't pass the eye test. I was red green blind. And incidentally, the eye test was developed by a Japanese. It was the Ishihara eye test that was used by all of the military, and I couldn't pass that. I couldn't get in the Marines, couldn't get in the Navy, couldn't get into the aviation cadets as a potential flyer. And at that point, I figured I was destined to wind up in the infantry. That didn't really appeal to me, but there was a war going on. And at that point, I found out that there was a program that the Army Air Corps, which later grew into the Air Force, the Army Air Corps needed people that had any background in radio at all, the basics of it and the practical uses of it, and so I got into that and wound up as a non-flying aviation cadet, got commissioned, and then when I got my commission, my first assignment was as an instructor at Yale.
One Ivy League to another. Let me back up just a little bit, though. When you, first of all, when you were in college, you were a member of the crew team, and you were big in dramatics and so on. During the summers when you were in college, did you go back to Titusville?
Yeah.
Did you work?
Did you play golf?
Yeah. Where did you play golf?
Oh, the Titusville Country Club. Learned how to three-putt every green. No matter how much I tried, that was my downfall.
What was the, I've often heard about the sentiment in Titusville during World War II, that because there was a heavy German population, there were some issues in church sermons on Sundays. I've heard that from my own family, where it once was like, we don't need to go there, we shouldn't be involved. Others who said, no, our families are there, we need to help, and so on. Did you get the sense in your college years coming home that there was a stance one way or the other in the small town of Titusville?
Not particularly. As a matter of fact, there was only one openly pro-Germany guy that I knew of in Titusville. And he got so open about it that all of a sudden he disappeared. It wasn't the Nazis that spirited him away. It must have been the OSS or CIA. I don't know.
But you also saw, and I think you mentioned this before, that there was a huge patriotic fervor up there, too, that you had a lot of people from that small community join the service.
Yeah.
How did you join? Where did you go to sign up?
Actually, I signed up in Pittsburgh, and I wound up down taking basic training at the Boca Raton Club. sounds great, but when you're taking basic training in the summertime at Boca Raton,
no,
that wasn't
not
a lot of fun. That's where I, by military days, started.
Now you didn't leave college and go right into the military. You came home for a while and worked at Pennsylvania Refining Company.
I worked at Pennsylvania Refining Company.
That was in
Titusville.
Worked
at Pennzoil, mm-hmm. and that was really when I decided I didn't like working with chemistry.
Were those in the Pennsylvania Refining Company? Where was their refinery in Titusville?
It was on Brown Street, along the railroad tracks, and Pennsylvania Refining Company. ultimately became Penn Drake. The refinery came right up against the Titusville Forge Works, which was a part of what is now, or later became, Struthers Wells. Titusville Forge and Titusville Iron Works and so on. They crankshafts and...
Did those companies retool for World War II? I mean, did they, like National Transit did and Oilwell, did they change what they were making?
Yeah, I don't know what they made before, but during the war, the Titusville Forge was making crankshafts for naval vessels. And I think that at times they were making gun barrels. Titusville Iron Works was doing some of that sort of thing, too.
Let me take a break for just a minute, maybe. Let me take a break from the show. Barbara Zolli walked in. And Barbara.
I'm very curious about what your memories...
Wait, you got to say who you are.
Oh, I'm Dinner's... Okay. To you?
Just because we've taken a break, I think. Then all of a sudden you appear. I think we're going to... introduce you or say now we're maybe Judy if you said now we're joined
actually,
by our
team. Be anybody you want, tell me, we'll just tell them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
No,
I don't pass for Colonel Drake very often.
Yeah. Ready.
Mm-hmm.
We've been joined by Barbara Zolli, director of Drake Well Museum in Titusville, and she'll do some questioning about the heritage of Mr. Harvey's family.
Mr. Harvey, it's wonderful to have an opportunity to talk to you a little bit about Titusville and a lot about what you remember about the Sieg family. Are there particular memories that you would like to share about growing up as part of the Sieg family?
Well, yeah, all that. Of course, I lived in the Sieg house for a while, and that was kind of interesting, mainly because my grandfather, who was German, always spoke English except Christmas time, the Christmas carols were always German. Still not Holly Knock. Those are the only ones I remember. That's the only one I remember.
Did he observe any German traditions? For example, did you any holiday specific German thing? Because here you have an Irish father and a very staunch German grandfather.
I don't know that the. One of the things that amazed people that I can remember is that whenever we had turkey, we also had sauerkraut. No, and nobody else ever had sauerkraut at the same meal where they had turkey.
Did he ever go back to Germany? He ever visited?
I don't. Well, yes, I know my grandfather and grandmother went back to. Not just Germany, but they went to buy a lot of the furniture that they were going to put in the new house that they were building in Titusville. Incidentally, I never knew either grandmother. They both died before I was born.
When your grandfather was widowed, did he live alone?
For a little while, and then his oldest daughter, Lillian, was married to a doctor, Dr. Quinby, and she moved in with him. She and her husband moved in with him, although I guess along the line someplace her husband died too, the doctor died. They had lived in the, I guess we owned the whole block. they lived in the house at the corner of Monroe Street and Main Street, and there's a house and also another building that's a part of it, and that later became a music school. When the Quinbys moved out of that house, then the Theobald moved in. I got lost now. Where are we headed on that?
Well,
did we observe any particular German holidays? I don't think so. I think that it. I don't think we did. At least I'm not aware of it. As a matter of fact, I was told once that my grandfather felt firmly that they had come to Germany, came to this country, they were Americans, and that was it. And that was particularly true, I guess, during the Civil War. And living in Kentucky, there was some pressure on him to take sides, and he was not very popular because he didn't. We chose to come to this country, we are Americans, and we intend to be Americans. That wasn't the popular thing to say in Kentucky at that point.
Well, those who fled those countries were very anti-military, too. They, during World War I, they didn't want their young people to serve. That's on the excuse that that's why we left. I can remember that sentiment in my own family. Tell me, your grandfather moved from he did move from the oil industry a little bit, because he and some others organized, they had $120,000 in cash, and they organized the Oil City Trust Company. That was in about 1891, they formed the Oil City Trust Company, and then he eventually became the president of that company.
I think the bank originally was a partnership, and who the partners were, I don't know, but then a number of the, as you say, the citizens got together and took that banking partnership and turned it into the Oil City Trust Company.
Would that have been, that was an oil-fueled bank, wasn't it? I mean, that was oil money that did that. Rockefeller, where in that? John D. Rockefeller, there's always been that thought.
Well, now, if you look at it, you have to see that he left some footprints there. There were other banks, for instance, in New York, the Seaboard National Bank ultimately became a part of Chase National Bank, my grandfather was the director of Seaboard. I mean, there were footprints there. You don't know exactly what they were, but there certainly was a connection, whether it was just a good personal relationship or was something more concrete than that, I don't know. I suspect that had there been anything in writing or any kind of a financial transaction, the Justice Department probably would have slammed the door that you can't do this. That's banking across state lines. That isn't allowed. And, you know, government people can get kind of sticky when they decide they're going to fight something.
I have been reading about the Seaboard Bank and the founding of it in a book called Derricks of Destiny by Samuel Gamble Bain. I think the last name is a fellow Irishman who came to this country and apparently formed an earlier partnership with Watson, Jonathan Watson, and then went on in his later life to found the Seaboard Bank. Does that sound familiar at all? Is that a familiar name?
I never heard much about the origins of Seaboard, except that I knew that my grandfather was a director of Seaboard, and that was one of the reasons why for some of his trips to New York, and I assume that when he was in New York attending a meeting of the board of Seaboard, he also spent some time at the headquarters of Standard Oil.
In his banking industry and in his oil industry, I would assume there would be a huge amount of traffic in and out of both Titusville and perhaps your home of influential people, people who had real stakes in both the banking and the oil industry. Do you remember any of that, or do you remember any of people talking about that?
I wasn't too aware of it. I was just a little kid.
But
I do remember at one point, and I was at my grandfather's house, and there were some, and I was just a little kid there, and there were some a lot of adults sitting around, I do remember somebody saying something about dry holes, and whoever it was talking about that said that, boy, there had been a lot of money dumped into those dry holes, and my grandfather responded that, yes, and a lot of it was mine. And that's one thing, and why that sticks in my mind, I don't know, and why a little kid my age then would remember it, I don't know.
But do you remember, for example, members of the other boards of directors at banks coming to see your dad, your grandfather, or even your mother being a descendant? Do you?
I can't say that I remember that much. Although I know that there were people that came to Titusville and saw him, and there he was in the late 80s and still apparently pretty influential. I can understand that now, being in my late 80s. I've been credited with more clout than I really have, but I never played that to the max. Maybe I should have.
You did it in such a gentlemanly way, but I think you carried the clout. What is your grandfather's lasting legacy? We're generations past that now, but what would his legacy be there?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I've never thought of it in that way.
There are the homes.
Well, also, he did have 11 kids, and some of them stayed in the area. The Sieg brothers in Oil City, for instance, Joseph and Arthur, and one of the things my grandfather did was buy some land and turn it into a cemetery, and then gave it to his church. And then after that, then he endowed it, and then also they needed water, so he paid to put a water system in, which was outside the cemetery. And incidentally, he named the cemetery St. Catherine's, and it was named for his wife. Who at one point had an asparagus patch up where part of the cemetery is. Well, she'd take the trolley and ride it up there and work in her big garden there. And one of the stories is, and I guess this is true, that he said that anybody who had family buried in the old Catholic cemetery and wanted to have their body moved to the new one, he would pay for it. Well, I'll tell an Irishman to dig up a body out of a grave. Oh, you can't do that. They'll never rest. They will never rest. And so not very many of them took advantage of that. I thought it was kind of dumb, but that was, Irish are superstitious. At some point, I might have thought that too. There'd be all these spirits roaming around that had their sleep disturbed. I don't know.
Did he endow? Did the Sieves and the Harveys, the Catholic families, did they leave a mark on the church up there, St. Titus?
I suppose to a certain extent. To a certain extent, because I knew that in the old church there were some windows that were dedicated to his memory. Incidentally, there were two Catholic churches in Titusville. The other was St. Walburga's, which was referred to as being the German church. And it sure isn't German now. It's Eastern European of some sort. But
St. Titusville?
Incidentally, they hung on to this German stuff about as long as the Poles were hanging on to
Assumption
Church. A few more of them have to die before they finally give up and realize that.
Wait, was St. Titus the Irish church then?
I guess it must have been. If the St. Walburga's was the German church, St. Titus must have been the Irish church, and everybody else were Protestants. Well, there was a synagogue there too.
Yes, there was a synagogue. And in all city, I mean, St. Joe's was always the Polish church, St. Stephen's was always the Irish church. An assumption was for everyone just in that neighborhood.
Well, I never thought of it that way.
As a Protestant.
In Oil City, I just figured it was the river that was a psychological barrier. And incidentally, those psychological barriers are big. They're more important than you and I would believe.
Like, give me another example.
Well, another example was when as a bank, we decided that we were going to move our headquarters from Venango County into Butler County because the branch banking could be allowed in contiguous counties. We had been shut off going into Erie County by people in Titusville, the Titusville Trust Company. They moved up there and took the only bank that was available, and that meant that we couldn't go to Erie, so we decided we might as well go towards Pittsburgh. We were looking for a place to put a branch that would become at least the legal headquarters in Butler County. And somebody who was hired by us to find a location said, here's an ideal location. Here's a part of Butler that has X thousand people in it, and they don't have a bank. And they don't because there are railroads and a river that went through here, and that was psychologically a big block. You put your headquarters there, and it'll do well. And they were right. All of a sudden, the people in that part of Butler had their own bank, and they supported it. As a matter of fact, the first Sunday after that branch was opened, at one of the churches, they preached a sermon recommending to people they do their banking there. And what church it was, I don't know, but I was told that helped steer a lot of business into the bank. River or not, we crossed it and it was successful. And that's the same kind of thing as the river in Oil City. I mean, there are bridges across the river, but it still is there.
Very specific, too, it is.
May we go back and ask you if you have any memories of St. Joseph's? I've seen some photographs, and the building, the architecture, was really impressive.
Well, yeah, I've been a member of St. Joseph's. Well, from the mid or late 40s until we moved to Oil City.
What was the academy like?
Oh, you mean St. Joseph's?
St. Joseph's Academy in
yes.
Titusville.
Yes.
Oh, that was different. That was
yes.
It was St. Joseph's High School. St. Titus closed the high school, and the Sisters of Mercy, who, when their mother house was in Titusville, they decided they would start a high school and operate it, and they called it St. Joseph's Academy. And that's where I went to high school.
It must have been fabulously supported by the community. It was such an imposing architectural structure. What was it like to be there at school?
The structure really was the mother house of the Mercy Sisters. And a big part of it was really a home for old and largely sick nuns. I mean, they didn't retire. They kept on going until they couldn't make it any longer, and then they'd go to bed and die.
So that was all part of the classroom?
And they had the classrooms were in a part of that building. Most of it was convent. They had a chapel and all works.
Because of the oil wealth up there, I would think that those places would be heavily endowed, like Barbara said, like St. Joseph would never want for money, I would think. And you had a lot of private clubs up there, and a country club. I mean, when you left Titusville and went to Georgetown, and perhaps your peers were from the same type of background, but did you feel like you had kind of grown up in this magical, wealthy town that was not like other communities?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to stop and think about that one for a while.
I've heard people say that about Old City. That, you know, when they went away to school in the 30s and 40s, they realized that they came from a very different community.
I suppose so. I hadn't thought about it much.
Yeah, you want to go back to the seats, or?
I'm curious about the sort of education you got at the academy. We're doing street signs interpreting some of the buildings that used to be in Titusville, and there's not a lot written about the academy.
No, because it never grew and never got the support that it probably should have, didn't get the support that the nuns thought it was going to. And a lot of it is similar to what exists today. The parochial schools have to depend on tuition to make it, and a lot of people figure out paying taxes to pay for the public schools. Why should I pay for another school? Although a lot of them realize that their kids, in some respect, got maybe a better education. They certainly learned manners, respect, things like that that aren't taught in the public schools. Aren't supposed to be. They're supposed to get that at home. But home today is not what it used to be. And it's really, home today has gotten even worse. A couple of days ago, there was something, I'm sure it was in USA Today, and this really short article pointed out that the number of illegitimate births in our schools, and I think it was referring to Pennsylvania, had reached the point where I think the percentage of births in the year 2006, 40-some percent of them were illegitimate, as opposed to the year 2000, when maybe 5% were. And that trend, unfortunately, has continued. And it's a byproduct of a lot of things. Poverty, single-parent families.
Joe, in your banking career, during your tenure with First Seneca Bank and then eventually...
Oil City Trust Company.
Yes,
first.
You're right, Oil City Trust Company. That bank underwent huge transformation. I mean, just a massive change in its direction, its geography, its people, actually it's kind of its mission. tell me about starting there. You came home from World War II, and you had worked in the oil business, and you didn't want to go back.
I didn't want to go back. I didn't. I had a chemistry major. I did not want to go back working as a chemist. I had done it two different refineries, Pendrake in Titusville, Pennzoil in Rouseville. I didn't like it. You never saw anybody except the people you worked with. And so I decided I was going to do something else, and when I got home, I had a lot of leave that I hadn't taken was piled up, so I had several months in which I had money coming in, but I didn't have to do anything, one day, for some reason, I was in Oil City, and I was in the Oil City Trust Company, and I looked, and the only men that I could see were all old. Older, not quite older than God, but close to it. And it struck me that someday those people are going to die or retire or something, and I don't see anybody that's going to take their place. Maybe that would be kind of interesting. So that led me to go apply for a job.
Why that bank, though?
Hmm?
Why that bank?
Well, this guy had been, among other things, president of the bank for 20-some years, president or chairman. Incidentally, he was the only guy that was president longer than I was.
I thought you were the longest serving president.
Joseph was.
Well,
he was longest serving, and incidentally, I don't think I want this in the written down any place, but when Heine Biltz was president, and he was due to retire, and I was the most likely candidate, and there was a board meeting, which I obviously did not attend, and they had to decide who was going to be the next president, and my name came up, and there was one person, and I don't think that guy was anti-Catholic, but he did raise a point. He's a Catholic. And